I need to shut down translator. Susan took control. I'm going down to the sublevels to throw the circuit breaker. Strathmore turned slowly to face her. He was a broken man. I'll do it, he croaked. He stood up, stumbling as he tried to slide out from behind his desk. Susan sat him back down. No, she barked. I'm going. Her tone left no room for debate. Strathmore put his face in his hands. Okay. Bottom floor. Beside the Freon pumps. Susan spun and headed for the door. Halfway there, she turned and looked back. Commander, she yelled. This is not over. We're not beaten yet. If David finds the ring in time, we can save the databank. Strathmore said nothing. Call the databank, Susan ordered. Warn them about the virus. You're the deputy director of the NSA. You're a survivor. In slow motion, Strathmore looked up. Like a man making the decision of a lifetime, he gave her a tragic nod. Determined, Susan turned to the darkness. Chapter 87. The Vespa lurched into the slow lane of the Carretera de Huelva. It was almost dawn, but there was plenty of traffic. Young civilians returning from their all-night beach verbenas. A van of teenagers laid on its horn and flew by. Becker's motorcycle felt like a toy out there on the freeway. A quarter of a mile back, a demolished taxi swerved out onto the freeway in a shower of sparks. As it accelerated, it sideswiped a Peugeot 504 and sent it careening onto the grassy meridian. Becker passed a freeway marker. Sevilla Centro, 2 kilometers. If he could just reach the cover of downtown, he knew he might have a chance. His speedometer read 60 kilometers per hour. 2 minutes to the exit. He knew he didn't have that long. Somewhere behind him, the taxi was gaining. Becker gazed out at the nearing lights of downtown Seville and prayed he would reach them alive. He was only halfway to the exit when the sound of scraping metal loomed up behind him. He hunched on his bike, wrenching the throttle as far as it would go. There was a muffled gunshot, and a bullet sailed by. Becker cut left, weaving back and forth across the lanes in hopes of buying more time. It was no use. The exit ramp was still 300 yards when the taxi roared to within a few car lengths behind him. Becker knew that in a matter of seconds he would be either shot or run down. He scanned ahead for any possible escape, but the highway was bounded on both sides by steep gravel slopes. Another shot rang out. Becker made his decision. In a scream of rubber and sparks, he leaned violently to his right and swerved off the road. The bike's tires hit the bottom of the embankment. Becker strained to keep his balance as the Vespa threw up a cloud of gravel and began fishtailing its way up the slope. The wheels spun wildly, clawing at the loose earth. The little engine whimpered pathetically as it tried to dig in. Becker urged it on, hoping it wouldn't stall. He didn't dare look behind him, certain at any moment the taxi would be skidding to a stop, bullets flying. The bullets never came. Becker's bike broke over the crest of the hill, and he saw it. The Centro. The downtown lights spread up before him like a star-filled sky. He gunned his way through some underbrush and out over the curb. His Vespa suddenly felt faster. The Avenue Luis Montoto seemed to race beneath his tires. The soccer stadium zipped past on his left. He was in the clear. It was then that Becker heard the familiar screech of metal on concrete. He looked up. 100 yards ahead of him, the taxi came roaring up the exit ramp. It skidded out onto Luis Montoto and accelerated directly toward him. Becker knew he should have felt a surge of panic, but he did not. He knew exactly where he was going. He swerved left on Menendez Paleo and opened the throttle. The bike lurched across a small park and into the cobblestoned corridor of Mateos Gago, the narrow one-way street that led to the portal of Barrio Santa Cruz. Just a little farther, he thought. The taxi followed, thundering closer. It trailed Becker through the gateway of Santa Cruz, ripping off its side mirror on the narrow archway. Becker knew he had won. Santa Cruz was the oldest section of Seville. It had no roads between the buildings, only mazes of narrow walkways built in Roman times. They were only wide enough for pedestrians and the occasional moped. Becker had once been lost for hours in the narrow caverns. As Becker accelerated down the final stretch of Mateo's Cago, Seville's 11th-century Gothic cathedral rose like a mountain before him. Directly beside it, the Giralda Tower shot 419 feet skyward into the breaking dawn. This was Santa Cruz, home to the second-largest cathedral in the world, as well as Seville's oldest, most pious Catholic families. Becker sped across the stone square. There was a single shot, but it was too late. Becker and his motorcycle disappeared down a tiny passageway. Caída de la Virgen. Chapter 88. The headlight of Becker's Vespa threw stark shadows on the walls of the narrow passageways. He struggled with the gear shift and roared between the whitewashed buildings, giving the inhabitants of Santa Cruz an early wake-up call this Sunday morning. It had been less than 30 minutes since Becker's escape from the airport. He'd been on the run ever since, his mind grappling with endless questions. Who's trying to kill me? What's so special about this ring? Where is the NSA jet? He thought of Megan dead in the stall, and the nausea crept back. Becker had hoped to cut directly across the barrio and exit on the other side, but Santa Cruz was a bewildering labyrinth of alleyways. It was peppered with false starts and dead ends. Becker quickly became disoriented. He looked up for the Tower of the Giralda to get his bearings, but the surrounding walls were so high he could see nothing except a thin slit of breaking dawn above him. Becker wondered where the man in wire-rimmed glasses was. He knew better than to think the assailant had given up. The killer probably was after him on foot. Becker struggled to maneuver his Vespa around tight corners. The sputtering of the engine echoed up and down the alleys. Becker knew he was an easy target in the silence of Santa Cruz. At this point, all he had in his favor was speed. Got to get to the other side. After a long series of turns and straightaways, Becker skidded into a three-way intersection marked Esquina de los Reyes. He knew he was in trouble. He had been there already. As he stood straddling the idling bike, trying to decide which way to turn, the engine sputtered to a stop. The gas gauge read, "Vazio." As if on cue, a shadow appeared down an alley on his left. The human mind is the fastest computer in existence. In the next fraction of a second, Becker's mind registered the shape of the man's glasses, searched his memory for a match, found one, registered danger, and requested a decision. He got one. He dropped the useless bike and took off at a full sprint. Unfortunately for Becker, Houlihan was now on solid ground rather than in a lurching taxi. He calmly raised his weapon and fired. The bullet caught Becker in the side, just as he stumbled around the corner out of range. He took 5 or 6 strides before the sensation began to register. At first it felt like a muscle pull just above the hip. Then it turned to a warm tingling. When Becker saw the blood, he knew. There was no pain anywhere. Just a headlong race through the winding maze of Santa Cruz. Houlihan dashed after his quarry. He had been tempted to hit Becker in the head, but he was a professional. He played the odds. Becker was a moving target, and aiming at his midsection provided the greatest margin of error both vertically and horizontally. The odds had paid off. Becker had shifted at the last instant, and rather than missing his head, Houlihan had caught a piece of his side. Although he knew the bullet had barely grazed Becker and would do no lasting damage, the shot had served its purpose. Contact had been made. The prey had been touched by death. It was a whole new game. Becker raced forward blindly, turning, winding, staying out of the straightaways. The footsteps behind him seemed relentless. Becker's mind was blank. Blank to everything. Where he was, who was chasing him, All that was left was instinct, self-preservation, no pain, only fear and raw energy. A shot exploded against the azulejo tile behind him. Shards of glass sprayed across the back of his neck. He stumbled left into another alley. He heard himself call for help, but except for the sound of footsteps and strained breathing, the morning air remained deathly still. Becker's side was burning now. He feared he was leaving a crimson trail on the whitewashed walks. He searched everywhere for an open door, an open gate, any escape from the suffocating canyons. Nothing. The walkway narrowed.
Socorro!
Becker's voice was barely audible. Help! The walls grew closer on each side. The walkway curved. Becker searched for an intersection, a tributary, any way out. The passageway narrowed. Locked doors, narrowing, locked gates. The footsteps were closing. He was in a straightaway, and suddenly the alley began to slope upward, steeper. Becker felt his legs straining. He was slowing. And then he was there. Like a freeway that had run out of funding, the alley just stopped. There was a high wall, a wooden bench, and nothing else. No escape. Becker looked up three stories to the top of the building, and then spun and started back down the long alley. But he had only taken a few steps before he stopped short. At the foot of the inclined straightaway, a figure appeared. The man moved toward Becker with a measured determination. In his hand, a gun glinted in the early morning sun. Becker felt the sudden lucidity as he backed up toward the wall. The pain in his side suddenly registered. He touched the spot and looked down. There was blood smeared across his fingers and across Ensai Tankado's golden ring. He felt dizzy. He stared at the engraved band, puzzled. He'd forgotten he was wearing it. He'd forgotten why he had come to Seville. He looked up at the figure approaching. He looked down at the ring. Was this why Megan had died? Was this why he would die? The shadow advanced up the inclined passageway. Becker saw walls on all sides, a dead end behind him, a few gated entryways between them, but it was too late to call for help. Becker pressed his back against the dead end. Suddenly he could feel every piece of grit beneath the soles of his shoes, every bump in the stucco wall behind him. His mind was reeling backward. His childhood, his parents, Susan. Oh God, Susan. For the first time since he was a kid, Becker prayed. He did not pray for deliverance from death. He did not believe in miracles. Instead, he prayed that the woman he left behind would find strength, that she would know without a doubt that she had been loved. He closed his eyes. The memories came like a torrent. They were not memories of department meetings, university business, and the things that made up 90% of his life. They were memories of her, simple memories. Teaching her to use chopsticks, sailing on Cape Cod. I love you, he thought. Know that forever. It was as if every defense, every facade, every insecure exaggeration of his life had been stripped away. He was standing naked, flesh and bones before God. I am a man, he thought. And in a moment of irony, he thought, a man without wax. He stood, eyes closed, as the man in wire-rimmed glasses drew nearer. Somewhere nearby, a bell began to toll. Becker waited in darkness for the sound that would end his life. Chapter 89. The morning sun was just breaking over the Seville rooftops and shining down into the canyons below. The bells atop the Giralda cried out for sunrise mass. This was the moment inhabitants had all been waiting for. Everywhere in the ancient barrio, gates opened and families poured into the alleyways. Like lifeblood through the veins of old Santa Cruz, they coursed toward the heart of their pueblo, toward the core of their history, toward their god